Hello and welcome to the Subconscious Coaching Podcast, the podcast where I talk about whatever I want because it's my podcast and not yours. Today, I have two amazing, incredible, phenomenal guests that I'm so excited to introduce you to. But first, I wanted to let you know that enrollment for the 16 Keys of the Subconscious Mind version 4.0, my very own Couture Mastermind, is approaching. So I spent all last year honing and distilling the process of the 16 keys into a potent science, and that work is now culminating into the 16 Keys Mastered Mind Group Program. We're taking cutting-edge neuroscience, deep subconscious coaching, and a unique branding and positioning strategy, throwing a whole lot of confetti all over it, and we're having a party. And the best part is, you're invited. This round is going to be open to not only new participants, but also alumni. So if you're new to me, you may not realize what a big deal this is, but I weekly have past students reaching out asking about when my container is going to be and if it'll be open to previous graduates of the program. And I'm so excited to welcome all the 16 Keys alumni back into the next phase of this journey. Ooh, thinking about it just gives me chills. The level of tenacity, the skill set, and the powerfully seasoned coaches that are coming back to go even further in their lives of business, their lives and business. I just have to tell you now that this room is going to be the room that you want to be in. This room is going to be a room full of pioneers and future leaders of the coaching industry, and it's for people who are willing to feel any feeling, who are developing their own modalities in the coaching industry, who are carving out their own lanes, and who see their businesses not just as vehicles to make money, but as the launch pads for cultural movements. So if you're interested in coloring outside of the lines in your business and you're ready to learn how to position your brand and sell the fuck out of your out-of-the-box or multimodality offer, this is the place you want to be. Enrollment is going to open March 28th. And I want to see you there. So make sure you follow me on Instagram if we're not already friends, at The Subconscious Brand. And make sure you pop onto my email list so you get all of the updates and you're the first one to know when the applications go out. All right. With that said, speaking of alumni, I am here with two of my favoritest alumni. Woo! I have Britta Joe and Quinn Otrera with me today, and today I wanted to bring you a really special episode that is near and dear to my own heart because it's a journey that I went through, and it was also part of the process that I supported Britta and Quinn through, which is leaving a religious community or an organized religion and starting to explore what might be slightly outside of the lines or outside of the box, and starting to find some of that inner spiritual authority within yourself to make decisions around your spiritual practices, around your spiritual beliefs, and starting to examine the ways in which the beliefs that may have been handed to you through your community, through your family, or through organized religion may or may not be working for you. So it's a really powerful episode, and I think the only thing more powerful this episode was watching each of these incredible women go through their own journey. So I'd love to just introduce you to Britta first. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Hi, Britta.
Hey, Alexander. So I am a mama of three boys, been divorced for 2 years, and I met you last year, and I signed up to do the 16 keys on the very last day.
Yes, you did.
It was a beautiful, like, last minute gut decision, and it completely changed my life. I am a totally different woman this year, and I love it. So I currently am a coach for women considering divorce, helping them figure out if they want to stay or go. And I love it.
Amazing. And I am also blessed to be in the presence of the magnetic Quinn Otrera. Quinn, hi.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I am doing so well. having Britta talk about joining 16 Keys a year ago brings back so many memories. And I think both of us would say that that was such a key point in our lives and our businesses. We had no idea what we were getting into. It was so much better, so much deeper, so much richer than any of your copy could ever explain to someone. So we are so honored to be back in your presence because of the love that you hold us with, that you held us with through this journey for us. And I have been out of the Mormon church for a couple of years now and divorced for a year. I am the mother of 9 children. I didn't just drink the Kool-Aid, I made it and I served it to my children. But now we're all on a different trajectory. And it's such a beautiful process. It was incredibly painful at the time and felt so scary. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that it's actually a beautiful transformation. Just the chrysalis, just turning to goo and then coming out the other side as a butterfly. Mm.
I love the analogy of a cocoon, because that is really what I think of as this container in so many ways, is just like a cocoon to let it get messy, to, you know, ugly cry and get snotty and get angry and to have all of the things fall apart so they can fall back together again. And you said, and Britta, I think you also mentioned that you both went through a journey of reclaiming your spirituality after being in the Mormon church for, you were both lifelong members, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
So the first thing I want to talk about is how you, each of you, knew or kind of came to the conclusion or got a step closer that there was going to be something more for you than what was available to you through Mormonism.
Yeah, I'll start on that one. Mine was a bit of a forced realization. About 4 years ago, I just hit a wall emotionally, mentally, physically. I was so depressed. I had no idea at the time that that's what that was, but I was hardly functioning in my daily life. I was constantly angry with my kids and I didn't like myself, and I knew something had to change, but I was so confused because this, I had everything I'd ever been told to want. I was married in the temple. I had the kids. I had the house. I had everything on the outside was so beautiful, and I was dying on the inside. So that was the moment where I knew either I figured this out or I may not be around. That's how bad things were for me. And it started going, I ended up finding a therapist, and she was the one who opened my eyes to, maybe it's not you, maybe this environment isn't what you need.
Yeah, that's super powerful. And it's, and I wanna just like jump in and say, we're going to have a very frank conversation about two people's experiences within organizations, right? Organized religion. I've also had my own experience inside organized religion. And I don't want anything we're going to say to come off as prescriptive or that it's going to be right for everybody. But I do want our experiences to be heard and to be valued and validated by anyone. And, you know, the thing that we were all talking about before we got on is like, how do we make this the most useful it can be for people wherever they're at? And so for me, you know, the thing that I come back to on my own journey is like, for many people in my life, like, leaving the organized religion that I was a part of was not the right thing for them, and it wasn't the best thing for them. And for many others in my life, it was. And so just being able to hold that duality, right, and being in this conversation with three people with for whom it was the best thing for us to leave, I think just opens up so much, so many doors and so much understanding. So I just want to pop that in there before anybody feels like we're totally trashing on religion, which we might at some points, right? We left for a reason.
Yep.
It wasn't working for us in certain ways. So, and just opening people up wherever you are on your journey, whether you're still participating in organized religion, whether you have some doubts and you're on your way out, or whether you left and now you're feeling alone and confused and disconnected from your spirituality and your spiritual family. I just want this episode to feel nourishing and for you to feel understood and held and powerfully supported. So just want to pop that in there so that we can speak freely and people know that yes. No matter what we say, we're speaking from the heart.
Yeah. So. And I was going to say to that, Alexander, I think what this podcast hopefully will do for people is, in that moment, I felt so alone because in organized religion, I'd been taught that was the only way, and that way was not working for me. And that was the most terrifying feeling of all, because it was like, if this way doesn't work for me, what kind of a life am I going to have? There's no other opportunities for me. Is this just it? And being able to be a voice for saying, no, there, if that is your experience, there are other ways.
Mm, yeah. And I think one of the really cool things, and then I want to hear your take on this, Quinn, but I think one of the other really cool things in the program is that some of the spiritual guides and teachers that I bring in are also ex-Mormons. And, you know, we'll probably talk about that maybe a little later. But I think just seeing people who have been through that journey and being around, and, you know, what was so cool about your round was that there were three people in the group who had left Mormonism. And in this past group, there were even more. And it just feels like the 16 Keys has become this meeting ground for people who have not just Mormonism, but left all kinds of organized religion and want to know and feel experiential spirituality, really coming in contact with
yes.
a knowing of the divine for themselves, and from that empirical experience, making choices and you know, making decisions about their belief systems in the world. And so it's just been really beautiful to see this growing community of people who are serious about their spiritual path and want to connect and touch the divine. So with that said, Quinn, tell me.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting what you say about you attracting these ex-Mormons, because I think one thing that Mormonism instills in you is this desire to stand and say, I know, because you're taught from a very young age to testify. I mean, kids that are 3 and 4 years old get up in front of the congregation and say, I know the church is true. I know Joseph Smith did this. I know we have a prophet. And everybody just kind of goes, oh, that's so cute. Instead of saying, bullshit, you're 3, you don't know. Mm. And so the Mormons come out with all of this structure now falling out from under them, but the same desire to know God, to know themselves. So I must say that at least for me, it really it instilled in me this insatiable desire to know, but to really know for myself, not have someone outside of me tell me. And when I left, it was, well, twice a year, Mormons gather for what they call General Conference. And so I had just listened to, let's see, it was probably 8 hours worth of men telling me how I should live my life. And Mormonism's very patriarchal, leadership, all men, at least those in, you know, major leadership responsibilities. And I was out walking around our orchard. My ex-husband owns a pecan farm, and he was telling me how he really wanted to invest in our marriage, and he was so excited about this conference, and he really wants to study these talks and change things in our life. And I remember saying to him, and it took every bit of courage for me to tell him, I don't want to be Mormon, and I don't want to raise my children in this. And at first he was incredulous, and then he was furious. Mm. He didn't believe me. I thought we could have a multi-faith family. It didn't work out that way. He's chosen to stay on that path, and my marriage did not survive. which is not a bad thing. But for me, staying in the church just required more self betrayal than I was willing to continue with. There was enough of me that was already out that when the prophet would say, we need to treat our LGBTQ brothers and sisters like this, that I'm like, I don't, that's not right. Mm. Or we need to shut down these people who are asking for these protections for children within the church, and me saying, that's not right. There was enough of that, mm. that the self-betrayal was too much and it felt safer to leave for my own sake. I had enough self-love to take that step. Mm.
One of the things that I feel like people who are listening, because there'll be a mixture of people, right? And some people may not be familiar with the Mormon Church. I definitely wasn't as familiar as I am now after having coached so many people through their faith transitions. But for those who are listening who don't maybe know a lot about Mormonism, what does that actually mean, right? I'm curious, Amy, like, because for us, that just seems like, oh, like, you know, you don't want to do this thing. You don't want to go to church on Sundays, or you don't want to whatever. But what was actually at stake? What's actually at stake for someone when they decide, hey, actually, I think I want to take a different, slightly different path?
Now I see it as extortion. You are told that if you leave, you lose your children for eternity. And they put a lot of emphasis on your ancestry. Like, Britta and I aren't just Mormons, like born and raised, but our ancestors. And so back generations, people have sacrificed and suffered so that you could have these blessings. And it's not enough to just, Mormonism isn't the kind of thing you show up on Sunday, or if you don't like who's running the congregation, you go shop for another. It's not like that at all. You are assigned people to look after and report about. Other people are assigned to look after you and report back. You have annual meetings with the leader of the congregation, who he's not a professional. He's just, you know, the orthodontist down the street that's called to lead the congregation. And he asks you, did you pay 10% of your income this year to the church? And if you don't do that, you do not get to go to the temple, which they say is the holiest of places and the only way to get into the highest level of heaven. And you have to go through these interviews, and your children starting at age 12 are interviewed every 6 months in what they call worthiness interviews. There's the 2 hours of church on Sunday, which they reduced from 3 hours. And then there's weekly events for your children. I mean, it is a lifestyle. It is not a little thing. This is your life.
This is an identity. This goes yes. beyond a lifestyle. This is who you are at your core. If you are raised in a very, I guess the word would be orthodox Mormon family.
Yeah. Mm. And it seems very normal when you're in it, that scripture study every day, religious study for high school students, an hour every day in what they call seminary.
And what you risk when you leave is you often lose, not only do you lose your community, but you lose your family. It's very shameful for your parents, for your grandparents, for your relatives, for you to not follow the path. So not only are you risking losing, you're losing all those circles of the people. And it's such a, you do everything with those people. You know, when I was dating, I was counseled not to date guys who weren't Mormon. So yeah. Your whole community is Mormon, and you're taught to fear people that aren't Mormon so that you don't make, you know, poor choices like they are. So to leave feels very, very, you are like a little boat casting off into the ocean on your own.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. For my son, he had just returned from a Mormon mission. And so boys, when they're 18, they're expected to go serve for 2 years somewhere in the world. And he was called home for COVID. And it was right after that I left the church. And he was incredibly sad and ashamed, I think, of this choice, didn't understand. But one of his greatest concerns was that I would not be able to attend his wedding, because Mormons are counseled to marry in the temple and only other believing Mormons can go to those ceremonies. And so I would be excluded. He knew I would be shunned, that there would not be a place for me if he ever got married. He has since left the church as well. But even as a young man, he understood there are going to be things where my mother is no longer welcome, even if it's as close of an event as a wedding of her child.
Wow. Yeah, I think it just really hits home how at times insular these communities can become, and what a powerful decision it actually is to make, to break, not just because of your own personal conviction, but knowing the implications that it may have on the way that your family feels about you, the way that your community feels about you, the events that you can attend and be a part of for those family members who may choose to stay in the Mormon church. I'm curious how each of you found the strength to make that powerful decision.
I would say it was a process. So, kind of gathering information as I was going along for about a year. And like Quinn said, there came this moment where I had started testing enough of what I wanted. A good example would be, you know, I had realized going to church on Sundays was not fulfilling for me. I came away angrier, more frustrated. The things I was hearing were really upsetting for me. So I made a personal decision, like, I just want to see what it's like to stay home from church on Sundays. And it was amazing. I started meditating. I started just being in silence with myself or reading books that I was interested in. And when my family would return home 3 hours later, I was like a new mom, like filled with love, ready to hold my kids. This was the experience I'd been seeking. And it made me start to question, because it was like, this is what's helping me be who I want to be most. It's allowing me to connect with my kids in the ways I most want. How can this be bad? And as more and more of those pieces started to fall into place where I realized, no, this feels right for me. Why would I force myself to do this? You start to build the courage through alignment with yourself to know what choice is best.
I love that idea of sort of dipping the toe in, right? Rather than feeling like you all have to do this, you have to make this big decision, you have to make it right now, and it all has to happen once, is like actually taking time to feel yourself out and feel and actually know, right? Come to different places of knowing.
I think that's a beautiful word, that sense of knowing, because once you know, it really seems, well, I don't want to say easy, but you've got your own back when you have that sense of knowing. And for me, it was similar to the process of that I've seen Britt and I go through with unwinding shame, is that you get these opportunities. Like, it was terrifying for me to tell my husband I was stepping out and I wanted to take our children with me. Terrifying. But I found, in order to get what I want, I have to be willing to feel the opposite. So if I want to feel safe, I've got to feel the fear and just step into it and hope that the ground before me appears, because it is so terrifying in that moment to say those words that you know have implications for so many people around you. But I took that step, and then I took the next step, and I took the next step. And it was the same, you know, it just reminds me, as we've had this discussion, how Britton, the first time I felt unashamed. And can I tell that story?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So
is this the one about the shoulders?
Yes.
Okay, I love it. That was just what was coming to my mind. Yeah.
So about a year ago, well, it was last June. Britta and I had known each other through coach training, but we'd never met in person. And she flew out to Arizona and we spent a few days together. And in the Mormon faith, women are not to show their shoulders or much of anything else. They wear special underwear they call garments, and you can Google it. And it's really ugly and it covers everything and very uncomfortable. Neither one of us particularly liked wearing it, but we did as believing Mormons. I had gotten rid of my garments when I left the church. I immediately got rid of mine, but I still had not worn anything sleeveless. And so when Britta came to town, I said, can we go shopping? I want to find something sleeveless. I want to have that experience of having my body feel sunlight.
And having already gone sleeveless, I was so overjoyed.
Yes, yes. And she said, well, first, we need to get you a strapless bra.
So wait, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When you say going sleeveless, does this mean that you had never worn anything without sleeves outside? Or
yeah, because once you go through the temple, you're given this garment and you're told you are to wear this day and night as prescribed. You know, I would take it off to have sex and then put it right back on, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
You're talking no tank tops, no spaghetti straps.
Yeah, none.
Those are some intense tan lines.
Right? You get farmer tans just by living.
But so you hadn't... Do you have to swim in them? Sorry, I'm having a lot of questions.
No, you can take it off to swim, but your swimsuits have... They're supposed to be one piece... Lots of coverage.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you had never really been outside with no sleeves.
No, not since I had been to the temple. You know, I was all the way in.
Yeah. You have to realize when I say Orthodox, there's a range in Mormonism, but Quinn and I were raised pretty strict and I followed it, and we both followed it very strictly. So there are Mormons out there who are not going to resonate with that. Like, well, you know, they tell me to wear my garments, but I can do what I want. That was not our mentality. It was like, this is what's been told. This is what you do. So for both of us, since getting married, I mean, I got married when I was 19. Imagine your body being completely covered by these garments you've been given by your religion. And you never really see your body outside of that. Like, your body is always covered.
I love it. And because people can't see you, the other thing I love about this conversation is that Britta has this beautiful sheer black top that you can see her bright red bra through. And Quinn has this gorgeous silky chemise. It's like a tiny little string of a blouse on. It's so good. But this was not the norm, I'm learning, for either of you. So Quinn, you were just telling us that Britta was the one who kind of got to usher you in.
Yes. So I was a spaghetti strap virgin, and she said, first we need the right bra. And not only did we not see we didn't see ourselves without our garments a lot of times, unless you intentionally stand in front of the mirror. But we didn't see other women naked. I never saw my mother naked. Like, you don't see women's bodies, at least in my household. And I had seven sisters. And there's just this real sense of shame about the modesty. And so we grabbed some bras, and she wanted to try on some lingerie. And the customer service agent went and, you know, opened a room for me to go into. And she asked if we wanted another room. And in that moment, there was this feeling of intense shame. Like, I don't want Britta to see me. I don't want anyone to see me naked. Mm. And instead, I recognized that voice as that old programming. And I said, fuck you, bitch. And and said, no, we'll just have this one room. And so Britta and I went in, you know, stripped naked. Like, we're trying on panties, we're trying on bras, and we're telling each other, you are so gorgeous. I love you so much. And just to be in the presence of another divine feminine, and our bodies are very different. She's very petite and has, I think, always been, and I've just gotten her into weightlifting this last year. And I'm much more of the, I don't even know how you would
all
describe
strong,
me.
Powerful.
Like, yeah, I'm the Amazon. And so very different, but still so beautiful, and held, we just held space for each other in this loving way. And it healed so much of me and that shame around my body and being seen. And then throughout the day, as we would try on new things, it became easier and easier to be seen and to see myself and to see myself through her eyes, which were so loving and kind, just holding me there. And that was the first time that I can remember, like, consciously choosing out of that shameful voice and saying, no, I am ready to live a shameless life.
And she took off from there. I have the photos. I have photos taken on the first day of that trip, and then photos taken like 2 or 3 days later after we had done this. And it, I remember bringing them home and my kids being like, those aren't the same woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like this, because did this happen during the 16 Keys?
Yes.
Yes. I feel like, because I remember you two bought a lipstick on that trip too.
Yes.
I remember that. I'm a makeup artist, so those are the details I remember. Yeah. I mean, what's beautiful about that too is I just think it underscores the power of community. Mm-hmm. And I think so often when we are leaving a community and walking into what feels like the unknown, it can feel like there's nobody waiting for us there on the other side. Yeah. And so I'm curious for both of you, sort of what the role that community played for you in your faith transition and in your process, right? It's like you had each other, you also had the 16 keys, but I'm sure that there's like, there's things you can't see before you go on the journey that now on the other side, I'm sure people who are where you were like, don't have the foresight to see and know everything that's waiting on the other side for them.
Definitely. I would say, so leaving for me, in Mormonism, I felt like the community was not intentional. It was just what was around me, right? It was accessible. It was what I'd always known. So leaving, you have to get way more intentional with who do I want in my life and pursuing and stepping into those areas. And when I left, I actually had a period of time where I really stepped away from any kind of spiritual community. I was really lucky that coming out of my, so I left the church in January of 2019. I filed for divorce in February. And towards the end of that year was when I signed up for coach training. So that was where I got a lot of my community, was going through coach training. But it wasn't until that next year when I found you and the 16 keys that I was even ready or open to hearing the way you talked about the divine, to even being open to wanting to connect with that again. Because I just needed some space to be with myself and find my own. I mean, I remember people asking me that time, do you believe in God? And I was like, I don't really know right now. And I'm okay with not knowing. It was through the 16 keys and the spiritual experiences I had there in ways that I had never dreamed of experiencing that I finally opened back up to, oh, there is a spiritual, not even a community because it's not organized, but there are people out there who speak my language when it comes to the divine. And with them, I feel safe, I feel loved, and I experience the deepest connection I've felt with, you know, what I now call universe or source, but others would call God.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's beautiful. And for me, I had recently moved away from Utah, where I was born and raised, to a very small town. And then COVID hit. And so there was a lot of isolation for me, which was really good. I didn't feel as much of a part of a community, which gave me the space to kind of delve into what I wanted. But I think community, that even if it wasn't intentional, that automatic community, it felt very safe. And so to step away from that, because a Mormon can go anywhere in the world and call up the local congregation, and they immediately, they'll have housing, they'll have food, they'll have people, they'll have friends for their kids. And so to step away from that, I had this sense that because I had maintained a tremendous kind of just web of community throughout my life, you go to a local congregation and there are hundreds of people, I thought, well, I have the capacity to have hundreds of friends and to know all of my neighbors. And I've discovered I don't. I have capacity for about 6 to 8 people in my life. And when you have 9 kids, you got to get rid of one of them.
Yeah.
But not really. But you just, to be intentional in a friendship, it requires investment. And it can't be taken for granted. And so for me, as with Britta, I've had to become very intentional about who I have in my life and really choose it. And I would echo her experience that it was through the 16 keys that I came to see a more expansive view of spirituality. And it was through one of your healers, who's also an ex-Mormon, Coulter Wilde, who has helped us tremendously with his breath work and how he just holds us with love because we come from this common connection, that we just adore him so much. We just want to send him all the love. But people like that, and the people that are attracted to the 16 keys, there's a whole variety, but it creates this beautiful container for all of us experiencing some of the same experiences, but each one is so different and magical, and to come together and coach each other. And it's a different kind of community around a different kind of spirituality.
It's a place for your differentness to be celebrated.
Yes.
And that was so healing coming out of Mormonism, where sameness is what's celebrated.
Yeah. I mean, I think with both of you, one of the largest things that I noticed was that there was a large sort of coming back into your own bodies, right? And really reclaiming sexuality and pleasure. Also just relationships, right? I think there's a lot of, or from what I've seen, right? And in the religion I grew up in, there's a lot of predetermined roles about how the woman is supposed to show up and serve and fit in and contort and just be there for whatever the man needs. And it's so interesting that, you know, in a belief system where suffering, it can be so celebrated and so honored, right? And pleasure seen as a sin, right? And that there's this common current of, I'll suffer now so that I can enjoy later. I'm just wondering if either of you wanted to speak to that a little bit in terms of what it looks like overcoming that program, what it feels like overcoming that programming. I'm sure probably have plenty to say.
Goodness, just give us the reins.
Right, so much to unpack. Go for it, Britta.
So I'll let Quinn speak to the suffering piece, because, gosh, that is so real. And I will speak to this role that I was totally brainwashed into, through no fault of my own, through just being raised in the culture of, this is what a woman is. She's a mother. She's a nurturer. Don't ever plan on having a career. I was never asked, what are you passionate about? What do you want to do? What excites you? And that, at the time, I bought into it. I mean, I was hook, line, sinker. Like 7-8 years ago, I was the best Mormon you could be. And in my community, I was upheld as like, wow, look at them. They are doing it. I had no idea how much was inside of me hurting by how small and limiting that viewpoint of myself was. A life where my only goal was to be of service to others and to take care of everyone else. And I experienced firsthand how, where that got me was, you know, I drained my cup so fully that there was nothing left, to the point where I was like, I don't even think this life is worth it. Like, why am I even here? And to see how actually the expansion of myself, the believing I matter, what I want matters. I get to feel pleasure for myself. It's not for my partner. My body is not for my partner. My sexual pleasure is not for my partner. And reclaiming all of that has filled me so fully that now I overflow in my life. And I give to the people I love most, not from needing to be enough and trying to manipulate and get them to love me, but from genuine, I have all of this inside me and more. And it has radically changed the relationships, especially with my children, because I no longer, you know, so much of the resentment I'd felt previously is gone. And I feel like I've given them the gift as well of seeing they get to live their own lives. Just like I get to live mine. We can all live these beautiful, full individual lives. Nobody has to sacrifice to take care of somebody else.
I love that. My son that I referenced earlier that went and served a Mormon mission, he has realized that he doesn't owe me or his father anything. He doesn't owe us his respect, his life, his, and everything that I had grown up to believe was that I really needed, for the sake of my parents, to show up a certain way. And they'd brag to everyone about how their 10 children had all gotten married in the temple and were all still married. And for me to kind of break out of that, and there's this idea that, you know, we don't want an empty chair at the table, that kind of idea that we're all going to be in heaven. We don't want any empty chairs. And I got out of my chair and walked out. And just to kind of focus back in on the suffering, because there is this view, the suffering is very much about the past, honoring the past suffering of our ancestors. And then we have our kids like 14 years and older, they do an experience they call Trek, where they recreate a pioneer crossing. And so they'll have certain people die. They'll have babies die. They'll have moms come.
Yeah, you know, this is real.
This is real. And kids dressed up in pioneer garb. And at the end of 3 days sleeping out under the stars and either too hot or too cold and starving, they're like, I know the church is true. And I'm so grateful for everything, you know, all of this suffering that people have done, but I just got a small taste of that. And it is so honored, you know, endure to the end and long suffering. And, but what I found from my own vision of that, you know, doing that all for the future, that I was always very focused on the past and I was always very focused on the future, which pulled me out of the now, out of the sacred now. And with Mormon marriages, they believe that you aren't married just for time, but also for eternity. And I remember an experience just a few weeks ago. I was entangled in bed with my lover and just holding him. And there was the early morning light coming through the blinds. And I had the thought, this may be the last time I ever see him, like ever. And the sacredness of the moment wasn't because I would have him for eternity. It was that I wouldn't have him for eternity, but I had him now. He was in my arms now. Our bodies were entangled now. And that's all we have. And so when we let go of the suffering of the past or the grasping for the future and just sink into the now and sink into my body and truly feel the sacredness of now, that has been one of the most healing skills that I have learned.
Mm. I second that. The body. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it's what's so fascinating and interesting to me is to see both of you speaking about this and then to see both of you as you are now embodied in the ways that you are embodied, in how you dress, in how you show up, in what you say, in, you know, who you choose not to fear, in the powerful decisions that you make in your life and career, and what leaders you've become in your communities, in your businesses. And so I'm really interested in how you've tapped in and just curious about how do you experience the spiritual as a divine feminine, which is something I know both of you really relate to.
Yes, for sure. Quinn and I were talking about this the other day, that in organized religion, for it to function, the very nature of it, you have to put your authority in an external source. Mm. That's what makes it work. And experiencing the divine feminine for me has been about returning that authority to myself and learning through, like we talked about, that experimenting of just trusting myself. No, this doesn't feel good. I'm not going to do it. No, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to make myself do it, even though somebody's telling me that's what God wants. And as I did that over and over, when you trust your truth, you start to find the divine within. And you realize it was here all along. I've been searching and looking for it in all these things outside of me, but it's actually right here. So the divine feminine has been for me realizing I am source, I am the universe, and I don't have to go outside of myself to find it. Typically, all I have to do is get very still and listen.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's beautiful because hers is very much stillness, where mine is very much movement. I have a pole dancing bar installed in the other room.
Yes.
And learning to move my body, to get bigger, to move in very sexy, sensual ways and not for the male gaze. Like, I have never danced for a man. I don't know that I ever will. But for myself, this ecstatic expression of what it's like to be in a female body, because the divine feminine cannot be separated from the feminine body, and the specific ways the feminine body moves, that sensuality, the curves and the grace and all of it. And so I can feel the grace of God hanging on the pole or on my lover's pole or at the bar or up the mountain or lifting weights. I mean, all of the places, it is there for me to have this ecstatic expression of the feminine. And it's wild. And it to me, it's kind of like the ocean, where it's so deep. And, you know, women are often criticized for their changes in moods. But then you look at the ocean, the tsunami is part of the ocean, but so is that clear glass reflection. And so is the hurricane. And so is the lapping on the shore. Like, all of it is part of me. So this expression of my spirituality has now become so big and so wild and so silent and so deep, like all of it, rather than saying, It's reading your scriptures. It's going to the temple. It's sitting in a pew. No, that can be part of it, but that's just such a small slice of the goddess that I am.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I'm over here like, oh, melting into right? my chair. So powerful.
And this is why community matters too. I was going to say, because having Quinn in my life shows me new ways to experience the divine, just like we had through the 16 keys. Each of the different coaches we worked with through you showed me different modalities of how to access the divine in ways I would never have tried otherwise.
I love that. And that is really one of the things that I thought about the most is like, it's very much this smorgasbord platter charcuterie board of just experience, visceral inner experiences. And I don't expect everybody to love every single thing on the charcuterie board. Not everything is going to be your favorite thing, but for everybody who goes through the 16 keys, they find at least one thing, if not a couple things, that really make a huge difference for them, that really shift their lives, that really connect them into a more expansive understanding of themselves in the world. And I can't tell you how many people have, you know, taken one modality or another that they've been exposed to and really created a spiritual path for themselves around that and continued that practice. And that's what I want, right? It's like exposure therapy is the way I think about it. It's like, I'm just going to expose you to a lot of things you might have never even considered before. And we're just going to let the universe do its magic. And we're going to allow nature to run its course and for what resonates with you to stick and for you to get to experience these different things. And what I think is so cool is because, especially now that this last group, was such a heavy group component, is getting to see how different people respond so differently to the same stimuli, I think really allows us to reside in the fact that we are such uniquely made creatures with such different ways of worshiping the divine and experiencing it and experiencing ourselves as a part of it, and that there's no right way or wrong way for any one person. And there's no one-size-fits-all spiritual relationship that's going to be fulfilling for everyone in the world.
Yeah.
Huge. So.
Yeah. I think the greatest gift that I got from the 16 keys, I came into it very afraid. Just because my life, I had lost my community. I had left my town. I was living in an apartment. I had all these kids to take care of. I didn't know about the future, just this fear. And then this programming from the religion saying, if you leave, you will lose everything that is important to you. You will not have the spirit of God be with you. You're going when you die, you will go to outer darkness. And so not only would this life be terrible, but forever after. And so to trust myself, but really wanting to feel safe. And through the 16 keys, through the healing that took place there, particularly through an experience with breathwork that happened right before Britta came to visit me, was that I came to this realization of who I really am, that I am so much bigger than this body, but this body is for me to experience on this plane. I am beyond my thoughts. I am the eternal, and nothing can hurt me. Like really nothing can truly hurt me because I am the fucking ocean. I am deep enough. I am wide enough. I am wild enough to take all of it in and to come out the other side, still the whole ocean. And coming to that sense of peace and safety is what allowed me to change my wardrobe. I took a lover a couple weeks later, dated more men than there are in Tucson.
I can verify. I watched all of this.
Yes, the adventures, all from that sense of safety and knowing who I truly am. I can't.
And this is why the personal journey in leaving, if you do decide to leave Mormonism, is so crucial, because it is a void. Make no mistake, you have this huge part of your life that is now gone. And I think it's a little naive to think that you can be raised in an environment like that and then just cut it out and not miss it or not feel that void. So I definitely invest in your journey. You have to trust your gut and go find the coaches or the books or the podcast or the people or the retreats where you find your new soul family and you figure out who you really are. You find the truth of who you are, which was what Quinn's describing. And that's what allows her and me to show up in our lives how we do. You're seeing the outside, but what you're not understanding is the depth and the level of personal work that we did to now be able to have the fun of, yeah, wearing something that feels super sexy that 2 years ago, even when I was working with you last year in the 16 Keys, I would never have shown up in a bra to a podcast. We worked on this extensively, Alexander.
Yeah.
Being able to feel sexy and know that it's for me and not feel afraid that it would draw, you know, unwanted attention or make me be more easily victimized. That's all the personal work you do, and it's worth it, because what Quinn's describing, living this big oceanic life where you do all of it, you feel all of it, that's the payout at the end.
Yeah.
For you, Britta, I'm curious about how your view of yourself as an individual changed through your journey of leaving. And specifically, to get more microscopic about it, talking about, you know, there's so much programming around family and family really being everything. I'm curious if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So, Alexander, you know, Alexander watched me going through like the hardest year of my life last year, going through the 16 keys. And that was centered around things that were happening in my family. And in Mormonism, family is everything, you know, that is your whole world. It is the foundation that you come from. And it's very difficult to acknowledge and understand if there is abuse happening in your family, emotional, mental, physical, sexual abuse. When you've been taught to trust your family so deeply, it can be very difficult to acknowledge and accept what has happened to you within your family, because there's no frame of reference for that. That's not spoken about in the church very often. When it does come up, it's shoved under the rug. There's a, you know, in my own experiences, I've seen how that image is very important. So sometimes victims' stories are suppressed. And so there's not a lot of dialogue around it. So in my own family, with sexual abuse coming to light, emotional abuse that I started to learn about and understand through therapy, through coaching, being able to choose myself over my family, right? Choosing to not have certain individuals in my life because to have them in my life was not healthy. The only way I was able to do that was through the tools I learned through coaching, understanding my responsibility to myself, how the brain works, and that they're responsible how they feel, and being able to let go of the guilt that you feel when you're disappointing someone, but you know you have to disappoint them in order to do the best thing for yourself. It's a tough journey coming out of Mormonism if your family has emotional, mental, sexual abuse in it, because there's not much support for ending relationships with family. So you have to do that work.
Yeah. What would you say would be the most useful or most important tool that you used on your journey, Britta?
So the one of the first things we learn in coaching is that your thoughts create your feelings. And that tool for me was huge because it allowed me to stop taking responsibility for my parents' feelings, which is what I'd really been trained to do through the abuse in my family. And that is what allowed me to know I'm only responsible for my thoughts and feelings. And if being around you makes it so difficult to manage my own thoughts and feelings, I'm always going to choose to do what's best for me. And that may mean we don't have a relationship.
Wow.
Yeah, I want to jump in with my favorite tool because I think it really strikes at the heart of what I got from 16 Keys as well, was that I learned to process and feel emotion, that no emotion was too big or too scary. But I had to go through it and feel it. I thought I had felt shame. I thought I had felt fear. But what I had felt was the resistance to shame, the resistance to fear. And so when I hired a coach and I was able to process, like allow that vibration to be in my body, to feel it and to feel it pass out of my body so that on the other side, I could make new choices without that vibration, like that fog in my way. And through 16 Keys, there are so many tools that you're given to say, is this what will get you there? Is this what will get you there? Without having to go back and dwell on what happened or figure out, why do I feel this shame? Well, it's because when I was 3 years old and your brain starts making up this story, you don't even have to go there, but you do have to sink into your body and allow it to pass through. And it can be so much more graceful and easeful than you even know. It's in Mormonism, there's a whole shame-filled repentance process. Go tell the middle-aged neighbor, you know, the head of your congregation, what you did, and then let him prescribe what you have to do and how long you can't take the sacrament or whatnot. And with this experience, you get to go to yourself, you get to go to your source, and then you provide so many tools and so many healers. Like you said, you know, there's something for everyone to find what is it that is sweet to you that will help you pass through this.
I love that. And it just, you know, I want to come back to something for a second that you were talking about earlier, Quinn, which was, you were talking about like not knowing and how when we come from belief systems, when we're raised in belief systems and we are raised to believe that we have all of the answers, we grow up with a certain level, I think, of maybe the feeling would be certainty, right? Mm-hmm. There's just like the belief is, I know what's true. I know what's right. It's very clear. Everything's black and white. And I'm on the right side of history and spirituality and morality and all of those things. And then all those people have got it all wrong. and there's this certainty that you get, this safety, this comfort, this way to locate yourself. And so I'm curious how you deal with or how you make peace with the not knowing when you leave a belief system that's rooted in, you know, all knowing, absolute certainty. I have all the answers.
Yeah. I really had to stare that one in the face when my son, my oldest son was 4 years old. He drowned. And within Mormonism, they can tell you where you were before you came to this earth and why you're here. And spoiler alert, earth is a test. And then depending on how well you do on the test, you go to one of the heavens after you get judged. And so when someone dies, it's very common to say, well, at least we know where they are. And obviously it was God's will and things like that, that are supposed to be very comforting to the person. And so I had lived for years thinking, at least I know where my son is. He died before he was 8 years old, before he was baptized in the Mormon church, which means he gets to go to VIP heaven automatically. So I know he's there. And so if I leave the church, he's already there and I will never see him again. And then I thought, you know, I've been telling myself I know a lot of things. Do I really? Do I really know where my son is? And the truth is, I don't. And no, nobody else knows either. So to just be really honest, do I know that, you know, Jesus did this miracle? No, I don't know. I mean, people say he did, and if you want to believe that, but to say, I choose to believe I know where my son is, that's one thing. But to say, I know where my son is, that's completely different. And so I just decided when I stepped away from Mormonism, I would no longer say I know something unless I fucking know it. And there's so much I don't. And just kind of relaxing into the mystery. I choose to believe I am held. I choose to believe I am loved by a benevolent universe. I choose to believe that this life is happening for me and through me, and it can be this joyful, sensual experience. But I don't know. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that, because one of the ways that I think about belief systems, having grown up in a very kind of fundamentalist, for, you know, for anybody listening to the podcast who doesn't know, I actually grew up as a missionary kid. So I've been all throughout Central America, Africa, deep in the bush of Mozambique, speaking to people who have never seen white people before, telling them that, hey, we're here to save you. From eternal hell, you should come follow Jesus, right? Oh, like, I mean, I had some pretty wild experiences growing up. And again, for me as a kid, it was just normal because that's what I was doing. That's what everybody around me was doing. We were all missionaries, you know, all missionary kids, all pastors' kids. So, you know, I just didn't know anything different. But I think the way that I look at spiritual beliefs now is so different. Rather than looking them at from a place of some like absolutism, right or wrong, that can never be known, I've started looking at them by the effects that they produce. So when you say, I choose to believe that I live in a universe that is benevolent, right? I watched your journey. I know the effects that that produced for you in your life. I can see the harvest that sowing those seeds of that belief reaped you, right?
Yeah, by their fruits, right?
Exactly. And so for me, whenever I'm looking at someone's spiritual beliefs, I mean, that's what I come back to is this belief, you know, bearing good fruit in your life or not? And that to me seems to be the most pragmatic way for me to approach my own spirituality. And of course, everybody gets to make their own decisions. But, you know, if we aren't looking at it that way, right, what I have tended to see with the people around me and people in different spiritual communities is that there's just no critical thought around what we're believing and what's being created and what we are experiencing in our lives and or what we're creating in our communities with these belief systems. And so I really look at now, and this is just for me, I really look at and judge belief systems by the fruit they bear, by what they're creating, by what the result of any given belief is. You can judge whether it is a helpful belief or an unhelpful belief, right? Which is how I think about it. I don't think in terms of right or wrong, because, I mean, here's the truth, right? The truth is, we're all fucking wrong. Okay? So, like, anybody who's out here being like, I know the absolute truth and da-da-da-da-da, like, 1,000 years from now, gravity won't be real and everything we know about science will be trash and they'll look back on us and they'll laugh. Like, we're idiots, right? We're all idiots. We're all shrimp at the bottom of the ocean with no eyes trying to understand what the sunlight looks like, what the color orange means, right? It's like, yeah. It's just so silly for us to think that we really know.
Yeah.
And so that's...
And when...
Go for it.
When we do, hearkening back to what you were saying, then we start valuing organizations, institutions over the people within them.
Mm. And
that is the work I do with women in their marriages. It's the same exact idea. So even if you're not Mormon or leaving a religion, there's maybe another area in your life where you are letting your individual results, like your life, be taken over by an ideology or I always think of marriage in this way, because there's so many women I work with who, what's the result the marriage is giving them in their life? They're unhappy. They're not connected. They're miserable. When we look at what their life looks like, it's not what they want, but they're staying because, oh, marriage is so sacred. Marriage is so important. Same thing with religion, staying because it's the one true religion, because Mormonism is right, and not really looking at each individual case. You have to get down into the nitty gritty of each person and what works for them, which is why a blanket statement, one size fits all, I just don't think it works anymore.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So as we start to wrap up, the one thing that I would love to hear from both of you is what advice you would have for somebody who is starting this journey. We'll do two, okay? So one is, what advice do you have for somebody who's starting this journey, just in general, right? Of beginning to reclaim their spirituality, explore, wanting to expand what they know, who's coming out of an organized religion, or maybe even more specifically Mormonism. And then what advice would you have for somebody who is about to begin an experience in the 16 Keys? Because we've got another round that is about to enroll March 28th. Woo-hoo! So I'd be curious, just to hear from both of you, sort of what advice you would give each of those people.
You go first,
I'll jump
Quinn.
In with the advice for someone looking to leave an organized religion or just consider maybe there's something more. I would say, first, hire me as your coach, Britta.
Definitely get a life coach. Really,
legit.
It's hard to get away from that. It is so helpful to have someone who is not in your head to look at your thoughts.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important. But if that is not somewhere that someone wants to go, to find a community, Reddit is a wonderful community. TikTok has a thriving XMO community. But find people who are asking questions, offering loving support. And I don't think you'll find anyone more loving than the XMO community. And they have a lot in common with the Jehovah Witnesses. Those two groups seem to go together because they have a lot of similarities. But to find yourself a soft place to land, it doesn't have to be in person. You may have no one in your family or your neighborhood, but it's there for you. Britta, what about you?
Yeah, I totally agree. Finding those people who can support you through your journey, whether that's a therapist, whether that's, I highly recommend therapy for people leaving Mormonism because it's a cult. Sorry. So just realize, like, this is a big deal, you guys. You can't just like leave this. Like I said, it's going to be a void. Find other people to help you and support you through that process. But the thing I would say is your wants matter.
Mm-hmm.
What you want is good. Where you feel love and where your soul feels called and where your intuition leads you is from God. It's from the universe, it's from source. And if you follow it, I promise you, you will get to a life filled with what you've been seeking, that peace, that knowing who you are and knowing that you're loved. So trust your wants.
Hey, now I want to circle back to the advice I would give someone who's looking to join your next mastermind.
Yes. Wait, before you do that, I have one thing I want to say about what Britta just put in. And this was advice actually somebody gave to me before I came out. Because plot twist, I'm a homosexual.
What? Tell us
now. Oh my God. I had a high school counselor who gave me like the best advice ever. And I think it could be very similar in a situation where you're saying something that has implications or might be met with as much resistance as, hey, like, I don't want to be a Mormon anymore. She told me, tell the people, like, rank all the people in your life. Look at, you know, all the people you'd want to tell that you feel safe telling. And then rank them from who would most be able to support you at the top to who you would need to be the support for the most, who you would need to support at the bottom, and to tell them in that order so that as you have the more progressively difficult conversations, you have more support behind you as you go through that process. And that was like a game changer for me. And I feel like so often we want to tell like maybe the closest person, right? Like our parents or, you know, the hardest conversation. And when you do that, but you don't have ample support behind you, it can be so scary and so overwhelming, and you haven't had positive experiences sharing that yet. And so that can just really shift the whole trajectory of the experience. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Both of us were outed to our families by our ex-spouses. And I think for both of us, it was very traumatic to have that option taken away from us. That it was told and we didn't get to say, we didn't get to have that conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So 16 keys.
16 keys. One of the things that you teach us in 16 keys is a lot about consent, and consent is not something that Mormons are big on. You get baptized and your parents will have the conversation. We're so glad you chose to be baptized, where you really don't have a choice. Or when you go through the temple, you're asked to consent to the ceremony and what you'll be promising, your covenants, before you actually know what they are. The marriage ceremony, same thing. Consent is not a thing. And so I think especially for Exmos, consent is a big deal. It is a big fucking deal to go into yourself and say, I choose this. I consent, because there are huge shifts waiting and it may not feel safe going in, but if you consent to this path where I won't necessarily feel safe, but I will be held, that is huge for me. I think Britta and I, we had no idea what we were getting into. I think we both felt a lot of fear, but we were held through the process. So trusting that Alexander has your back, the healers that he is bringing in, and they are holding you as well, that everyone is there if you will simply consent to that path.
Yes. And that knowing that, like, for a lot of people who come in, part of owning their consent is owning their no. And sometimes that happens in the program about certain portions of the program, and that's great and celebrated too. Like when something is not a yes for you and you can't get there, right? And you're willing to look at it and be with it, and that can just be okay. That can sometimes be one of the most healing things. And that from there, you actually get access to your yes. But sometimes you have to go through that no first. I love that. Consent is so freaking powerful. Such powerful work.
And I saw you do that in our program. Yes. We went through. There are people that said, I don't want to do this part. And you're like, that's okay. And they were still held with so much love.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was so important.
Really important. And I remember watching that as well, Quinn. Certain individuals who just, everybody's at a different piece in the journey. So my advice is, if you are feeling it in your gut and it feels also like, you'll know when it's this fear that is like calling you to your destiny.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because that's where I was at last year when I got into the keys. It was like, oh my gosh, this will be such a huge step. I don't feel ready. I have no idea, but I just felt it in my bones. And I knew if I don't do this, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna really regret it. And so I went for it. And then I just released into the process. I didn't try to control and micromanage it. And I'll admit, I came out the other side with a totally different result than I thought. You know, I thought I was going to go in and blow up my business. And the universe had different plans for me. I watched everything get burned down in my relationships. And I had so much support all along the way because I just kept releasing. I just kept believing this is exactly where I'm meant to be. And I showed up for myself by picking this. So now I can just keep showing up and releasing and being loved.
Oh my God. So powerful. And I just, oh yeah. I mean, I just look at you now and I'm just like,
I look at me now and I'm like,
It's so beautiful to see the work that you've done. And it's such a testament to just the powerful decisions that you make. And, you know, for anybody listening, that really is how you create transformation, is through making powerful decisions. So I would love to know, Quinn, where can we find you on the interwebs for those of us who want to interact with you?
All right. I am at quinn.otrera on Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to have you here. And Britta.
Oh, thank you, Alexander.
So you can find me at stayorgocoaching.com, or you can look me up on Instagram at Considering Divorce.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much for being here with me both. It was so good to have you. I'm so just overjoyed to get to have these conversations and to come back together with alumni from the program and have these deep talks about how this work has landed, how things have integrated. If you're listening and you are feeling that tickle in your tummy, if you are getting ready and feeling like there's some transformation available to you, whether it be in your personal life, in your relationships, in your business, in the bottom line of your bank statement, I want to invite you to join this next round of the 16 Keys of the Subconscious Mind. It is so important and powerful for us to choose intentionally the people that we are going to have in our lives. And as you can hear from Britta and Quinn's experiences, having that community, having people that you're going through these experiences with, especially if you're going through a faith transition, especially if you're leaving a religious dogma like Mormonism or Jehovah's Witness or evangelical Christianity, I want you to consider investing in the highest level support that you can get, because not only are you worth it, but so many of us grew up with such deep ties to spirituality that's part of who we are. And it's part of what makes us feel whole and human. And I see so many people who leave their faith or transition out of their faith feel some sense of lostness. And some sense of, I know that was me for, you know, 5 or 6 years after I left my religion, was that it felt like something was missing. And so after I took the time to really heal from that experience that I had had in religion, it was time for me to go out and create something new and find a new community and find something that worked for me. And I think the beauty of the 16 keys is we do both of those in one. We do a lot of religious and religious trauma healing. We also do a lot of community building. And there really is no better place to be if you're a coach who wants to build their business and develop spiritually, expand their consciousness. So please, if you're feeling the call, join us. We have another round that starts in May. We're enrolling on March 28th, and enrollment will close April 3rd. So make sure you're on the list. You can do that by going to my Instagram right now at The Subconscious Brand. If you go to the link in my bio, It's just a click, you put in your email, and you will make sure you get the information you need to be where you want to be, which is in the 16 keys. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time.